Jets. You'd be proud of this game, and you can do a great deal for football today. Great deal for all the players and the league and everything else.
Oh, I see him looking. I'm closing.
I was born in it. Molded by it.
Yeah, so they got to wake up with a piss out.
You're talking about Rasul.
Mercedes Lewis here, a.k.a. Big Dog. Big dog, big dog. When you listen to the Poor Man's Packers podcast, go Pack Go.
Good night, man. I'm so excited. Let's roll.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Poor Man's Packers podcast, the number one Packers podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with someone new, someone who is a tertiary character in the PMP pod universe, last year's fact checker, not Kyle. Not Andrew. Andrew's in Vegas currently. He will be back tomorrow, but I want to get an episode out early. Billy, welcome to the podcast this week.
Yeah, thanks, Spencer. Thanks for having me on. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Excited to be here and try and unpack the debacle that was in Detroit on Sunday afternoon.
Yes, Billy is a big Packer fan as well. You are also an owner. You're one of the few, I would say, that when talking Packers, I'm actually surprised with how much you know. You probably even know more than me, which, not to toot my own horn, but is a little surprising. But the other thing about you, I know you've been to a few games. What Packer games have you gone to? Because it is an abysmal list when you've told me before.
Oh, God. So the very first Packer game that I went to was the year that Rodgers broke his collarbone the first time. Yeah. Went to the game with my cousin. She has not gone back to a game with me since. Mm-hmm. We saw one possession of Seneca Wallace, and then it was the Scott Tolzien show.
Yes.
Against Philadelphia, and we lost handily. I went to a game against Baltimore with, I believe, Brett Hundley at quarterback.
Was one of the worst Packer games I remember watching as well.
We got shut out. It was ugly. I went to a game in Arizona with Rodgers around Christmas one year, and we lost like 43-8 or something. So okay. Not ideal.
And then last year you went to a game. What game did you go to last year, Billy?
Last year I went to the game in Kansas City for the Rodgers versus Mahomes show. And no, it actually wasn't. So
yes.
If you don't want to see Rodgers play, when you go to a game, just invite me to go along, and chances are you're not going to see him.
Yeah, it really is like, and you had told me that before the Rodgers COVID thing last year, and like you had those tickets before the season even started, and you're like, yes, Mahomes versus Rodgers, and then what is it, 2-3 years in a row where we think we're getting that matchup, and it didn't happen?
Exactly right, yep. Yeah,
so you're quite snake-bitten, just like the Packers this year. But with that, we will talk about the game. Packers, if anyone had forgot, lost 9-15 in Detroit. Pretty damn shitty. We will have our normal episode. We'll have our Lynn Lake pick six, the six plays that shaped the game. We did watch the game at Lynn Lake. You were there too, Billy. And well, the six plays that shaped the game. After that, we'll break down the offense briefly, the defense briefly. A little bit different after that. We'll talk about Rodgers and LaFleur and Gutekunst and just how we feel about them going forward, the confidence level in all of them. We're at kind of reaching that crossroads of the season right now. After that, we will have Take News, some fun Twitter drama, as always, when the team is not playing well. We'll have Is Kyle an Idiot, some Packers trivia, and then we will, of course, preview the Cowboys game and probably talk a little bit about Mike McCarthy. But first, pick six.
Pick six! Pick six! Pick six!
Yeah! All right, first pick six play. You guys might notice a theme with all of these. A 0-0 game, 4 minutes left in the first quarter. First in goal, Aaron Rodgers has the ball, drops back, throws a, this is right after the Mercedes Lewis catch to get into the red zone. Rodgers throws a low ball, hits off a defender's helmet, and is quickly picked off after it floats up in the air. A run pass option that he elected to pass for. So at first watching it, I was like, fuck, why aren't these receivers trying to get the ball that's up in the air? But they were also run blocking at the same time. A couple of them, at least Christian Watson, who was closest in the area. But, the first drive that got the game going for the Packers, and like many others, it ended in a red zone INT.
Yeah, Spencer, I go back and forth on this one. Watching live, I was I was thinking it was a terrible throw. It looked like he was open, looked mm-hmm. like we threw it behind. Mm-hmm. But then you think about it a little more. I mean, for the ball to bounce off of a dude's helmet like that, yes. you know, it's a round ball, as far mm-hmm. as I know, and the helmet is round as well, right?
Yes.
Okay, you're staying with me. So if the ball is thrown just a little bit higher, it deflects off completely differently. Maybe yes. it deflects off the crown of the helmet, goes out the back of the end zone. We live to play another day. It's another inch or two lower. It smacks the guy in the face, falls harmlessly to the turf. Like, that ball floated in the air about as long as any deflected football I've ever seen in my time of watching football.
Yeah, it was one of those watching live where it's like, fuck that. Like, as soon as it happened, it was one of those where it's like, this is probably going to get intercepted. And there's been, this year more than I can remember, there's been so many deflected balls at the line of scrimmage. I think that just shows you the hesitation that Rodgers has in his play, and he doesn't really feel confident in a lot of these throws, trying to make something happen. But yes, not very good, and it was just, you know, a small example of what was to come. Moving on, the next pick six play, Packers ball, first play of the second quarter, a fourth and goal going from right to left. You guys might remember this one. Rodgers takes the snap, fakes the handoff, rolls to the right and stops, reverses field and tries to throw it to a wide open David Bakhtiari. I was looking at the snap counts and I was like, when did Royce Newman get in the game? I was like, oh yes, that's right, when Bakhtiari came in to report eligible. But yes, low ball picked off by Detroit's first round pick. Not even close. I think this might have even been, you know, there's been a lot of bad plays this year. This might have been the worst throw of Rodgers' career, I think. But yeah, another lackluster play in the red zone.
What are your thoughts on the play call itself?
Yeah, we had this debate watching the game, and I was texting with Hank and Kyle from, you know, the podcast last year, and they were irate. They were more pissed at the play call than the throw. It's one of those where when you call this that play and it doesn't work, the coach is going to look like an idiot. But if Rodgers puts two more feet under that ball and Bakhtiari can get under it, we score. It changes the outlook of the game. I think it is one of those moments where it's like, haha, wow, David Bakhtiari scored. Fun little trick play, get the offense going. But obviously, it kind of did the opposite. What did you think?
You know, looking back on it, I think this play is really a microcosm of the way the season has gone.
There's a lot of those in this game.
Fourth and goal, fourth and short, you know, mm-hmm. in the red zone. I mean, if this is a fourth and short, gotta have it. We want to get some points here. And we dial up a throwback pass to our left tackle?
Yeah.
What does that say about the confidence level that we have in the playmakers and the rest of the offensive line that we can't punch it in from 1 yard out?
Yeah, it's strange because, you know, I don't hate the play call. And we talk about these guys getting more creative on offense. Once again, you know, if it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't, you look like an idiot. But we've been so bad on fourth down this year, too, where it's like, well, you might as well try something. This didn't work out, but, I mean, God, if you give Rodgers that play 10 times, I think he's going to complete that pass. 10 of them. You know, this was the, I don't know, the tear in the universe where he threw a terrible, terrible ball.
Well, and maybe this is just one of those games. You know, we've had weird things happen in Detroit lately, right? There was that game a handful of years ago where Crosby missed five kicks or whatever it was.
I forgot about that too.
I mean,
yeah.
how many throws did Rodgers miss that he just has never missed and probably will never miss again?
Well, that's what was so weird, because Rodgers was bad. Probably, we'll get into it later, but probably the worst game, I would say, of his career, with all things considered. You know, maybe you would say the Niners in the playoffs last year, but when you're going up historically the worst pass defense of all time, you got to do better than 9 points. So that mixed with his performance is dreadful. But yeah, moving on, the next pick six play, 12 minutes left in the third, score is 8-0 after the Lions touchdown. Facing a 3rd and 11, Rodgers goes deep to Samari Toure, but, you know, Turi's got a step on him. Ball is just a little too short. The Lions defender gets a ball on it, swats it away, falls harmlessly to the ground, and the Packers end up punting. But another one of those plays where I think the last few years, especially myself, I was wondering if MVS is running the right route on these deep balls. But, man, Rodgers is consistently throwing short on these. It's happened a couple times with Romeo Dubs. And once again, in a game where we needed these plays to happen, he was, you know, at least 5 yards short of the throw in, you know, demoralizing, I would say.
Absolutely. I mean, watching it live, we saw on the broadcast, of course, it's only following the ball. So it's hard to understand how open a guy is. On that one, I could see a yard or two of daylight between Toure and the defender. So you're thinking, this is a touchdown. This is a throw that Rodgers doesn't miss.
Yeah.
And when you can see in live time on the game broadcast how much Toure had to slow down to try and catch that ball, really shows how far it was underthrown.
Yeah, I don't get what it is. I don't know if he's, we talked about it with the tip balls at the line of scrimmage too, if he's trying to force these a little bit more and he's not putting as much air under some of these balls just to try to be a little bit more precise and force them in there, but not good. I like that Toure was getting some more targets in this game, but my God, it was just nightmare after nightmare. Moving on, the fourth pick six play after Jaire Alexander's interception. The Packers have the ball with 9 minutes left in the third. Second and 10, Rodgers drops back in an empty backfield. Throws it over the middle to one Robert Tonyan, but there are two defenders there. The one in front picks off the ball, runs it back a little bit, but Rodgers' third INT in the game. I think they were on the 22 for that play too. So three picks within the 22-yard line. Just abysmal, one after another, and we've known Rodgers to be the safe guy who doesn't throw INTs, but this is about out of character as we've seen him ever.
Agreed. I thought live that maybe it was thrown a little bit behind him. Looking at the replay, I think I understand why he threw it where he did. There was a safety over the top, looked like he had a chance to put a big hit on Tonyan, and you know, watching Rodgers, he likes to try and protect his receivers.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I think this one might have been just his worst decision of the day.
Yeah. It's fun that you're like, this might have been his worst decision, when it's like, well, which one do you want to go with? There's really no bad option for how bad these throws were on Sunday. Moving on, the fifth pick six play, third and three, Packers on the 7. This was their second to last drive when they're down a score. This is the one that ended up in the field goal that they made. But facing a third and 7, Rodgers throws the slant to Sammy Watkins. It's a little behind. I would say out of all of these plays, this is probably his best throw. He gave Sammy a chance, but as we've seen this year with Sammy Watkins, if you give him a chance to perform, he's not going to. Drops the ball. Could have been a better ball, but either way, third down forces the field goal attempt. And once again, you know, we catch that one, a better ball. We score a touchdown there. Different game.
That's a throw that an NFL wide receiver needs to make.
Yes.
I mean, you're getting paid to catch the ball, so that's a ball you got to catch. And my God, has there been a more disappointing Packers free agent signing in Sammy Watkins since,
God,
Joe Johnson?
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will get that reference, but I don't know. This year, it's been really tough for the free agent signings, too, because I would almost argue Jerron Reed. I don't know if that's the same type of, you know, we built him up our own through training camp where he seemed to be making noise, and that's more a Jake Hansen-type deal than a Jerron Reed being good type deal. But Sammy Watkins, he signed a similar deal as Devin Funchess did a year ago or 2 years ago, I guess. So we could have cut him before the season, and Coach LaFleur talked him up a ton. Rodgers, even 3 weeks ago, talked him up a bunch when he was coming back, and he was excited about having him, Cobb, and Lazard on the field. But my God, he is a waste of space on offense now, especially when we have the three rookies behind him, Dubs being hurt now. But it's wasted snaps at this point.
And maybe what's the most disappointing thing with Watkins is I don't think anybody that's a rational Packers fan expected him to come in and replace Devontae and have 80 receptions for 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns, right? I mean, if you had asked me at the beginning of the year what I expected out of Watkins, I would have said, get me 500 yards receiving, 4 or 5 touchdowns. Like, I would have felt that between him and what I expect out of Lazard and Cobb and Tonyan, throw the rookies in there, maybe a bigger role for Aaron Jones. That felt like what we needed out of Sammy Watkins, and he's maybe on pace for 300 yards this year?
If that, I don't know. It was tough, because going into this year, no one knew what this wide receiver room really was. We were like, I think Alan Lazard is the one. After that, you have the veteran twos and threes, and then whatever happens with the rookies. And now, you know, I think even like week five when he originally went on the IR, I was like, this is fine. I don't care about Sammy Watkins. But now with Cobb being hurt, with Lazard being banged up earlier, Dobbs being hurt, Watson off and on, it's like he's just needed at this point because we don't have other bodies to fill those snaps. I guess maybe we'll see if they're going to make a roster move this week and call up Juwan Winfrey. I think we kind of have to just with Dobbs going on IR more than likely. But, man, it's just, it's not fun. I mean, the two catches he has the last 2 weeks are first downs at least, but I don't know, just wasted snaps at this point. Moving on, the last pick six play. I think everyone could guess what this is. After three straight incompletions, after getting the ball back and driving into the red zone on the final possession, under a minute left, facing a fourth and 10, and once again, another play that encapsulates the season. After a timeout, Rodgers hurries up to the line, you know, snapping his fingers, trying to get the ball off. They barely do, probably don't even with the actual play clock. Like, they could have thrown a flag, would have been fine. Drops back, throws a post or a corner route to Sammy Watkins. Sammy runs a slant and a anticlimactic ending to what we were hoping to see. I mean, the whole second half, it's like, are we going to... It was so bad, but I'm like, are we going to end up winning this game and feeling terrible even though we've lost the last four? But bad ball, nothing close, no hope. Packers end up losing 9-15.
This play was just, it was just doomed from the start. Like you said, we called a timeout. We come out there. We barely get the ball off. I don't understand how we have a timeout. We have the time to talk about it, figure out what we want to run. And then we still drain down the entire play clock, yeah. Getting up to the ball, getting lined up, getting it snapped. Was it on time or not? And then as we've seen with other receivers all year long, not just Sammy Watkins, but Rodgers just isn't on the same page.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, is this a play that Rodgers drew up in the dirt? Or is this a play where Watkins needs to read what the safety is doing? It's kind of an option route type thing. Is that actually built into the play? Is Rodgers telling him to do something different? There's just so many moving pieces. Whatever the case is, not everybody is on the same page.
Yeah, and again, with these veteran guys, we were hoping these would be the ones that would be on the same page with Rodgers. When we have these three rookies, we're trying to get into the offense as well. And for that to happen multiple times in this game, just sad, demoralizing, but not good. Once again, Packers fall 9-15. Jumping into the offense. Offense, if you forgot, not a good game. 9 points is not very good for a football team, let alone one that is quarterbacked by Aaron Rodgers. Shaped up, you know, after last week, we had a pretty even split, 30-30 for passes and runs. This week, 43 pass attempts, 25 rushing attempts. Rodgers obviously had the three picks. We were 8-15 on third down, but 1-4 on fourth down. We are officially the worst team in the NFL on fourth down, converting just 20% of the time. And God, I feel like every one of them is like fourth and three, fourth and two. The one we converted was, well, the last play was fourth and 10, but we had the deep bomb to Ture, which I believe was a fourth and 10 on top of it. But yeah, offense not looking very good. Fourth in yards per game, but 27th in points per game. We are 11th in yards per carry, but 20th in the league in rushing attempts. We're averaging 36 attempts a game, which is 10th in the NFL. So not great. Lots of problems on offense. Don't really know where to begin, but might as well hop back where we were. Aaron Rodgers, not a very good game.
So, Spencer, as we alluded to earlier, the team just isn't good on fourth down. They're not good in the red zone.
Yep, they're not good.
I went on a little bit of a deep dive this afternoon.
Okay.
Want to prepare a little bit here for my first podcast, right? So do you want to take a guess as to what our red zone touchdown percentage is this year?
This year?
This year.
Red zone touchdown percentage. 35.
We are actually better than that. Yeah. We are 50%. That's tied for 23rd in the league.
Okay.
And for context, this surprised me, actually. Last year, we were only about 58%, which was smack dab in the middle, right at 18th. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we're appreciably worse. We're obviously worse, and I think Devontae is a big part of that.
Yes.
What I found particularly damning, however, is the last three games, we have a touchdown rate of just 27%, which is dead last in the NFL over that time. So whatever we were doing at the beginning of the year, when we beat the Patriots, when we beat the Bucks, when we beat the Bears, that's not happening anymore. And I think we can kind of go back to that fourth down play call on the throwback to Bakhtiari. We just don't trust anybody to make a play and get us into the end zone.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, and especially this game too, not only did we not score touchdowns in the red zone, but we had no points. And under LaFleur, we've been solid. We've been pretty good on fourth down, especially early on. But now it's like we keep going for fourth down in these fourth and manageables, but we don't have the same offense we've had in years past. So instead of that excitement that you kind of get with the do and die plays, I'm holding my breath, especially seeing AJ Dillon and shotgun on, you know, fourth and short. But yeah, not very good.
And maybe we need to change our mindset here a little bit. I know that fans want us to be aggressive and go for it on fourth and short in scoring position, and I'm right there with them. But if we're being ineffective and we're not getting what we need, and that's 6 points, maybe we need to play it a little bit more conservative, especially against Detroit when the defense is keeping us in the game. It's not like we're down two scores the entire game and we're trying to get back into it. We were within one score that entire football game. Why not play it conservative, trust the defense, play some old school ground and pound football, let the defense get you the ball back, play some field position, and rely on Mason Crosby, who's been pretty reliable this year.
Yeah, it's tough because at the time, and we're saying it here now too, you know, it's like, you know, when we're going for it, it's like, yeah, it makes sense. But, you know, once you get to the third and fourth quarter, it's like, shit, you know, if we would have just taken those field goals, we would have, you know, won the game. But what are you going to do? Moving on, Aaron Rodgers, we'll go over him again briefly. Finished 23 for 43, 291 yards, one touchdown, three interceptions, was only sacked the one time. First time in his career, he threw two INTs in the red zone. He had those four straight incompletions to end the game pretty bad. Hated the two-point conversion call. I think
terrible.
We've got a little lost in the weeds on this game too, but like you said when we watch it, cutting the field in half where he essentially only had one guy he could throw to and Lazard wasn't even in the end zone. Not very good. And I will say this, one small positive for everyone who says Rodgers doesn't throw to rookies. He did throw that yellow ball to Ture on the fourth down play where he somehow came up with it, almost fumbled it. That was God, you know, it's such a shitty season when that last drive went the way it did where A.J. Dillon had the fumble, Ture had the fumble, and then the shitty four plays at the end. But I don't know. I think we've talked enough about Rodgers, but my God, just the worst game that I could. In a season of terrible games, this was far and away his worst game in my eyes.
Absolutely.
Moving on to Aaron Jones and the running backs. Aaron Jones finished with 9 carries for 25 yards, a 2.8 average. Once again, like every freaking game this year, especially in the first half, he obviously got banged up, but I don't know why he wasn't getting the ball more. I think in the first drive or two, he only touched it twice. He did have two receptions as well, had that nice screen on third and long that made it fourth and manageable. But I say it every week, you know, maybe not every week, but so much of the last decade has been obviously Aaron Rodgers and, you know, how we've mismanaged him not having a defense for him. But once again, Aaron Jones, I think, is the best Packers running back in the history of the franchise. And we really overlook it every single week because we have Aaron Rodgers on the squad.
I think he's definitely in the conversation for top five running back in team history. I mean, it almost feels like the last days of McCarthy where he just criminally misused Aaron Jones, didn't give him the ball.
It's weird how much this leading up to the Cowboys game this week, this season is mirroring McCarthy's last few seasons in Green Bay. But yeah, moving on, A.J. Dillon again. I mean, he was fine. He finished with 11 carries for 34 yards, a 3.1 average. But if you get rid of his one long run of 9, he only averaged the 2.5 yards. Again, I am sick of seeing A.J. Dillon in shotgun, especially in these short yardage situations. One of the times in the red zone, we handed off to him twice on the 1 or 2 yard line, and he got absolutely stuffed. It just doesn't make sense to me. I'm fine with running it with him, but just do it under center. I get Rodgers' thumb might be banged up. They've mentioned that a bit, but I don't think his thumb got worse between now and Buffalo, and he was under center quite a bit in Buffalo.
The frustrating thing, too, is I remember they ran at least one play out of the I formation. They had DeGuara in there as a fullback, and they ran it with Dylan, and he picked up 5 or 6 yards. Mm-hmm. It was a nice pickup. So, and I think, I could be wrong, but I think that might have been the only time we've seen that formation in that game against Detroit, and we don't go back to it.
Yeah, I don't get it. At least DeGuara was getting more snaps and was in the backfield a little bit. But, God, even just the Aaron Jones pitch play the last 3 weeks, it had been like a guaranteed 5 yards. And I don't think we ran it until late in the second or early in the third, and it was a negative play. I don't think it got a gain, but, God, it's been so damn good the last few weeks, and then after that we didn't see it again. Again, it's if we're going to run it out of the shotgun, that's the play I'd like to see. Moving on to the receivers. God, I don't even know where to start here. I guess we'll start with Sammy Watkins. 5 targets, 1 reception. Looks lost. Looks old. I don't think there's really much we need to add to that. Alan Lazard finished as the number one receiver. 4 receptions. Good. 87 yards. Good. 1 touchdown. Should have been 2 touchdowns. But 10 targets. I think we're seeing, again, we were hoping, at least this far into the season, one of these rookies would kind of take the reins of the offense and being the number one receiver, but we're seeing what it looks like when Alan Lazard is the number one guy. And he had a couple drops on third down this week too, which used to be really reliable when he was the 2 or 3, and now it's like, what are we doing? Moving on, Sammy Toure. Sammy, I didn't pronounce that correctly.
No, Samari.
Samari Toure. There we go. Much better. Finished with the 2 receptions, 34 yards. Obviously, the 4th down pickup. That was pretty cool.
I think he needs to get some more run. He's flashed the last 2 games against Buffalo and now against Detroit. 4 targets in both of those games. Had the big touchdown against Buffalo. You can see that he's getting open deep, and that's something that we've lacked this year. That's kind of the role that MVS had for us the last couple of years. Haven't really had anybody be able to stretch the defense. We thought maybe Christian Watson could do that, especially after the first play of the season.
Yeah.
I think Toure needs to get some more run here, and especially with Dobbs now out for a couple of weeks, Cobb continues to be on the shelf. We haven't seen anything out of Watkins. Feels like Rodgers has a little bit of trust in him, and he's making some plays. I think he needs to see more snaps.
Yeah, I think so, too. If nothing else, you know, what is the season going to be? Are we going to make a run here, or are we going to try to see who these guys are and develop them? I'd like to see. I don't know how good he is at blocking. He seems to be the smallest receiver outside of Amari Rodgers, so that could be part of the problem, too. But like we talked about earlier, I would rather see Toure on the field than Sammy Watkins at this point. Sticking with the rookies, obviously Romeo Dubs got hurt on that first catch he had. A nice little throw to pick up the first down to the 18 yards. It is a sprained ankle. He would be out 4 to 6 weeks, they're saying. Sticking with that, Christian Watson had the 2 receptions, 24 yards. The one was a nice little pickup on third down too. And then, of course, he got banged up. And since we're talking about the injuries, we will run through all of them right here. Watson obviously left the game with a suspected concussion, but apparently that didn't happen. He just had the wind knocked out of him, which is a little weird. Aaron Jones left the game in the second half with a knee injury. He should be good to go this week. Dubs, like we said, out 4 to 6 weeks. Eric Stokes on defense. We're still waiting to hear on that. It sounds like the swelling needs to go down before they know how bad his injury is, but that could potentially be season-ending. And the big news on the injury front, Rashawn Gary confirmed torn ACL, out for the remainder of the year. We do still have another year of his rookie contract after picking up that 5th-year option, but not good. We'll talk about the defense a little bit later, but something I thought this week, too, it's in a win-now game, and I don't want to be that guy. I think this is kind of talk of a dumbass fan, but in a win-now game, the Packers elected to hold out Christian Watson and Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones post-game said he thought he could go back in. He felt fine, and he said after sitting around, you know, his knee did hurt a little bit more. Christian Watson, we haven't heard from him, but you should. If he's clear to go, I understand it's a little touchy with him, and he's the more you see him, the more excited you get. But in a win-now game, it seems like these two guys could have gone out there, and who knows how the game ends if they are.
I'm so glad that you brought this up, Spencer.
Ooh.
that is something, the more that came out about that after the game, where LaFleur said that it was no concussion, he passed the concussion protocol, which, how many guys pass the concussion protocol on the sideline during a game?
Yeah.
And for the team to admit that he passed it, but they continue to keep him out, and this is when Randall Cobb is already out, Toure had already gotten hurt at that point.
Mm-hmm.
We've already talked about what we have left at the wide receiver position outside of those three guys. Why wouldn't you put him back in the game?
Yeah.
You're basically left with Watkins and Lazard, and then Rodgers and Toure.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's tough, you know. Talking earlier this week, too, it felt like at the end of the game, you know, it's like, come on, Rodgers, do some magic. But at the same time, he had weapons like he had in the 2015 playoffs when it was just Janis and Jared Aberderis late in that game. So, yeah, I don't know. It's tough. It's a touchy subject. But if nothing else, Aaron Jones, it's like, shit, why couldn't he have been out there? But whatever. Moving on, tight end, not too much to talk about here. You know, Tendian had a nice game as well. 3 receptions, 29 yards. That seems to be what he does every single week. And just had DeGuara getting more and more involved. Had 5 receptions, a career high, and 41 yards. So nice to see that. If nothing else, getting him more involved means the run game should happen a little bit more too, with, you know, him being a bigger guy playing in the backfield. But other than that, the only other thing to talk about is the offensive line. They only gave up the 1 sack. They blocked for 3.14 yards a carry. Not sure what you do with David Bakhtiari at this point. He pulled himself out of the game after the target he had. We saw the shots of him riding the bike on the sideline, but did come out for that final drive. And early in that game, too, John Runyon got hurt. So the rookie phenom, Zach Tom, hopped in the first half and played some guard, hopped in the second half and played some left tackle. Pretty impressive. Once again, only with the 1 sack, held up well enough. You see some replays where he's just getting bullied, but he's doing his job enough, which is all you could ask for from him at this point.
He's fighting and he's scrapping. I mean, he doesn't have prototypical left tackle size. I don't think that's his position long term.
Mm-hmm.
But for him to have that capability to swing over and play left tackle when Bakhtiari is out against the number 2 pick in the draft, Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah.
And hold his own for the vast majority of the second half, I think that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, we've had some questions with Goody and his drafting, you know, all of them, the 4 or 5 that he's had. The one thing he's done is offensive linemen, and especially the flexibility with Elton and Zach Tom. Now, and if you want, you can throw in Royce Newman. Not that he's very good. That's more of a Don Barkley type guy, I'd say. But pretty impressive to see that. Other than that, David Bakhtiari, I mean, after last week or the week before, where it's like, well, shit, are you going to be able to count on him going into the weekend? Now it's like we can't even count on him going in when he's, you know, suiting up and playing at the start of the game and holding himself out. So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting offseason with a lot of these contracts, but especially with his. But
what is his contract situation?
I know this year he counts more against the cap than Aaron Rodgers does. I think that's more of a contract finagling type deal, but it's similar next year where I believe it's like 18. He's hovering right around that 20 million. So I know we'll have some cap relief, but God, I don't know. Not it's so much really since he tore his ACL, we've had so much bad mojo with this team. It's sad. And now with the seasonal depression going on too, I don't know what to do with my life. But with that, we will have a quick commercial break.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
And we are back with the defense. You know, kind of a almost prototypical Mike Pettine game where I want to get mad at Joe Barry, but I can't because the defense played pretty well. Obviously, they only gave up the 15 points. The Lions were averaging 36 points at home, so pretty impressive to see that. Moving on with the players here. Jaire Alexander, pretty solid game. Had the pick when we needed it. And watching the replay, too, and everything, it's one of those where I'm like, God, seeing him running with the ball, it's like, I feel like we should see this more often for how great of a player he is and shut down. It's like, we, even when he gets the picks, he usually has to go out of bounds or is tackled right there. But to see him with the ball in his hands too, I'm like, fuck, is he going to score? Because it's nice to have some excitement on defense, I guess.
He's dynamic with the ball in his hands. I mean, we saw it on the return there, and it feels like if he could have gotten a couple more blocks or something, I mean, maybe he takes it to the house, but I seem to remember coming out of Louisville a handful of years ago, there was talk about him returning punts, and I understand that he's extremely valuable to our defense.
Now he cannot.
But good grief, can't you put him back there to fair catch it over Amari these days?
That's the argument, and I believe Jair did return a couple punts his rookie year. And there's been, I know Justice Mosqueda for Acme Packing, he's brought it up in the past too, where he wouldn't mind seeing him on offense. And apparently they have fucked around with that in the past during practice. So I don't know. He is dynamic. When you see him with a ball in his hands, it's like, holy shit. It's kind of like, you know, Christian Watson earlier in the season, where it's like he has that other gear. And then when you see Sammy Watkins, it's like, okay, now we're going back three gears and this is molasses running on the field. But yeah, I like seeing the long yellow sleeves he was running with too. I think MVS tried to do that last year, the year before, and they fined him or they wouldn't allow him to do that. But I kind of like that swag on the field. Not so much the late hit that he had and then put his ear or hand to his ear to the crowd afterward.
Not a great look there.
Yeah, I don't know if he knew the flag happened or not, but it was like, what are you doing, man? Not a good look. Moving on to safety, Darnell Savage still not very good. Gave up the touchdown to the tight end late. Just, once again, losing guys in the secondary. Never want to see that. And we were just talking about Jair's return there. Both Douglas, lesser, but Darnell Savage, full-blown ha-ha Clinton Dix, even on a return where he is just trying to avoid contact.
You pointed it out to me before the replay. And, yes, I called out live what Rasul was doing because it almost looked like he clipped heels with Jair trying to get out ahead of him and throw a block. So credit to Rasul for trying to actually do something productive. Almost blew the whole thing up, but he was trying at least. Whereas Darnell Savage, it looked like he was more just backpedaling and observing what Jair was doing. Like he wasn't even trying to throw a block.
I don't get it. It's like he was blocking when you see Rodgers on a reverse or something, where it's like, okay, I'm gonna pretend to block, but I'm not actually gonna try to. I'm just going to set a pick.
I'm just gonna get in your way and make you take an extra step around me.
Yes, exactly. Inside linebacker Quay, you know, didn't have a great day. You see a lot of replays on the long runs and he's out of position, but when it did matter, that third and one, he did finally hit the right gap, blew up the play in the backfield. Preston
made that play. He absolutely walked back Penei Sewell and just cut him out, blew the play up in the backfield. I don't know if it was Swift or Williams on the run.
I don't remember either.
Even if Quay doesn't blow through the hole and make the play, I think it was dead in the water.
Probably, but at least one of those where when two guys make a play with Preston and Quay, it's like, okay, cool. They lost 3 yards when if they make it back to the line of scrimmage, I'm not sure if they wouldn't have gone for it anyways. And especially this year,
true.
I think everyone hates seeing the opposing offense go for it on fourth down, but especially this year, I'm like, no, please just punt us the ball.
And satisfying to see our defense get a stop like that in a situation when you know they're going to run it down our throats.
Yeah.
A unit that struggled all year to get stops.
Yes. Sticking with inside linebacker too, a little weird, Chris Barnes coming back. I also hated seeing the inside linebacker for Detroit with the last name Barnes. That was a little, not confusing at times, but I was like, wait, what's going on here? I haven't seen Chris Barnes in a while. Did we cut him and he's playing for the other team? But Isaiah McDuffie, he was the highest rated player on defense according to Pro Football Focus. He started the game kind of weird. He started the game and then was replaced by Chris Barnes. And then later he replaced Chris Barnes, which is odd when they, and I think Justice Mosqueda talked about this too, when they practiced with Chris or McDuffie all week and then pulled him that quickly. It's like, why are you wasting practice reps on a guy that you're going to pull after one series and replacing him with Chris Barnes, who is as rusty as you could be at this point? Moving on, outside linebacker Rashawn Gary, like I said, is dead. Hopefully he will be back next year. Preston, okay game. And again, JJ and Igbari, got another play we could have talked about. That sack that he had, I don't remember if it was third down or first down, but
I think it was a third down. They got a free 15 yards out of it.
You just you can't touch a helmet at all, apparently.
You shake your head. I mean, Goff was already going to the ground, brushes his hand on the helmet. If this play happened 3 weeks ago, it seemed like a couple of weeks ago, there was a run where every single week there was some god-awful, terrible roughing the passer penalty, and it was in the media, and everybody was all up in arms, and then it just kind of disappeared and went away. I don't know if it's because of the news with the Washington football team being up for sale or whatever the deal was. There's more important news now, but I'm with you. You just apparently can't touch helmets anymore. There's no gray area on any of these, and it's just frustrating how soft the league seems to have become on some of these penalties.
With so much money that the league makes, and they've kind of had, like, there's been talks of a sky judge, and sometimes they do buzz into New York for certain plays. How do you not have just someone watching the game, like us being idiots at the bar, that can be like, hey, this is really fucking stupid. Just let the football play happen, because that didn't affect the outcome of the game. It didn't, you know, Jared Goff was fine.
It was already a sack anyway.
Just dumb. I hate it. Hopefully we get some improvement in the future, but we know that's not going to happen. Defensive line, I don't know what to say. Kenny's had a bit of a slow start of November the last couple weeks. We haven't seen too much of him, but that defensive line and very, very underwhelming. Dean Lowry, I've said it, I'll say it again. 7 years he's been on the Green Bay Packers. I can't remember a player who has been on the team that long that has had less of an impact. We wonder why our run defense is so bad. I know Dean had a decent year last year, but I feel like you know, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And that's what Dean Lowry seems to be overall for this defense.
My whole thing with Dean Lowry is you just never hear his name called on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I understand that he's a defensive lineman in a 3-4 scheme. Like, he's not going to be J.J. Watt or Aaron Donald out there. And I get that. But it seems like the only play he makes is where the guy that's supposed to block him just completely whips, right, or two guys pull and leaves a wide open alley for him to come in and make a play. Like, that's literally the only play he makes is where it's just thrown into his lap and he has no other choice.
Yes.
I don't know. Again, I'm just a stupid football fan. I don't know what I'm watching.
Couldn't agree more.
But thank you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I at least know enough where, like on that Preston play, I know enough where I can recognize, hey, that wasn't all Quay Walker. That was Preston Smith pushing his guy back.
He beat his man.
I don't know that I've ever said, that's a great play by Dean Lowry. He didn't finish the play, but he made the play. You know what I'm saying?
We'll always have the play in Tampa against Jameis, probably his rookie year or his sophomore year, where he picked the ball off and ran it for a touchdown. But yeah, I don't get it. And you could say a similar thing with Jerron Reed. Jerron Reed's going to fall in the lines of Muhammad Wilkerson, the Troy Guyon of a one-year defensive lineman who didn't really make any impact. We got Kenny Clark, who's great, great all-around player. But then we have the, you know, pass defense ends in Lowry and Reed, and they're just not guys. I know they haven't been great this year, but TJ Slayton and Devontae Wyatt, it's like we can't be worse. Might as well get some more snaps out of these guys.
Young guys, both draft picks. You know how much Goody and Ted Thompson have loved their draft picks.
Yeah.
I don't understand why neither of them are getting any more playing time than they are when Reed and Lowry are just completely underwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, we're still one of the worst, you know, rushing defenses in the NFL. Special teams briefly. Jair had the non-block. That's a whole thing. You know, that kind of shaped the game as well with those 2 points and then us having to go for two and all that. I still hate Amari on punt returns. Kind of, you know, fell through the cracks with so much other bullshit going on in this game. But again, he's on like the 6-7 yard line. Could have called a fair catch and caught it, but nope, lets it bounce. And then the Lions down it on the one. It's just like these little fucking plays. And it's every other play this week, whether it's, you know, not blocking correctly or someone running the wrong route. There's so many mental mistakes, and more often than not, we see that on punt returns too. But yeah, that's all I had. Anything else from this game? Get off your chest?
No, I think we've pretty well exhausted that.
Well, with that, you know, there's been a lot of talk this week, this year, but especially after losing to Detroit and falling to 3-6. What the hell are the Green Bay Packers? Our confidence level all around is kind of dwindling, so I figured might as well, you know, about mid-season here, 8 games left. Let's, you know, take a little check here on our confidence on the 3 main pillars of this franchise, Aaron Rodgers, Matt LaFleur, and Brian Gutekunst. Starting off here, Billy, Aaron Rodgers, 8th in yards, 7th in TDs, but he has the most picks he's had since 2016. He's 27th in the league for QBR. Again, everyone knows, but this is the first year of his three-year extension, $150 million. It's essentially a two-year deal after 2023. They can get out of it with a $8 million cap hit in 2024 and $16 million in 2025. But either way, you know, we can't cut him, can't really trade him. If he retires, it's an extra $9 million against the cap, and he'd lose out on $50 million himself. So he's probably going to be back next year, but maybe we do trade him to get something and just kind of eat that year for those picks. But, Billy, where are you at with Aaron Rodgers right now? What should we do with Aaron Rodgers?
So, Spencer, we're recording this on Tuesday evening, so we've had about 48 hours here to kind of digest what we saw on Sunday, right? Mm-hmm.
True.
The first 24 hours, I was pretty down. I was pretty down on Rodgers, yeah. Pretty down on the team as a whole. But today, you know, I've started to think a little bit more about it, and I think we can both recognize that is potentially, and I don't think there's much discussion here, that is potentially the worst game that Aaron Rodgers has played as a professional as a starter.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, it was against the 32nd ranked Lions. That's also a team that has their back up against the wall, playing at home, divisional game. You know, they know that their jobs are on the line. They're still professionals at the end of the day.
And we're still a team that every week they circle that matchup because you're playing the Green Bay Packers.
100%.
We've seen it with, like, the Jets players wearing the cheese heads and shit after the game. It's like we're still a marquee game for these guys.
So what I'm getting at is, yes, Rodgers played very poorly. Has Rodgers played up to his standards even before this game? No. But as you pointed out, he's still top 10 in yards. He's still top 10 in touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And yes, he now has his most interceptions since 2016. But how many other players have thrown less than 10 interceptions every year since 2016?
Right.
So, and I think Rodgers has made this comment in years past, a down year for him is still a pretty damn good year for a lot of other quarterbacks. So, to be honest with you, Rodgers is the least of my worries right now. Yeah, he played bad, but I mean, has he had other games where he was just bad, or was he just average?
Yeah, because it's mostly average, you'd say. It is kind of the guys around him and the mistakes they're making. Yes.
Right. And I think, again, as the season wears on, we got to get some of these receivers healthy. We got to get Cobb back. Hopefully Dubs is able to come back for, you know, the stretch run the last couple of games. That's going to be tough. But get Watson some more reps. Get Toure some more reps. And I think we're going to start to see that connection gel between him and the receivers. So I'm still cautiously optimistic that Rodgers has good football ahead of him.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too. Unfortunately, we do agree on a lot of things when it pertains to the Green Bay Packers. But yeah, because it's like I believe in the hardware of Aaron Rodgers, but I don't know about the software of Aaron Rodgers right now. And we'll get into that with talking about Matt LaFleur too, but that's the whole conversation, and it's always been a thing since we've hired Matt, is, you know, there's Matt's offense, and there's the offense the way Aaron Rodgers runs it. He said it this offseason. He said it during the season this year, and it's part of, you know, being on the same page with these rookies. But it's like, if we could just fucking update Rodgers' software to the 2022 Matt LaFleur version, you know, 0.20 or whatever, you know, it's later in the season, I'd feel a lot better about this team. But it's tough to know what's Rodgers' fault, what's the offense's fault. But, you know, we haven't seen this much read option shit as we've seen this year, so much out of shotgun. It's hard to think that, you know, Rodgers physically, it's still there, but it doesn't seem like he wants to play the way he probably should in this offense and with the guys he has around him.
His body language on Sunday was some of the absolute worst that I've ever seen out of any NFL player, let alone Aaron Rodgers.
It was really bad, but I didn't hate it for one reason being is it wasn't always directed at someone. Like, there was a couple just barbaric yells to the sky where it's like, okay, well, at least he's mad at himself right now, and he's not directing it at other people, but whatever. The body language police have been out all year.
But I also don't know that he's ever been the kind of, and this isn't a criticism, I'm just stating facts. I don't think he's the kind of rah-rah guy over on the sideline that's over pumping everybody up.
Yeah.
So my concern is you've got these young receivers that see, you know, him making these mistakes and getting frustrated and emotional on the field. And does that start to creep into their psyche a little bit?
There was a clip too that they showed that was on Twitter, but it, you know, didn't pop off like all the negative ones, where he did come over and talk to all the receivers, huddle up and show some stuff. So whatever. Moving on, Matt LaFleur. Like I talked about, what is his offense? This is his first 5-game losing streak. Every time that he's had back-to-back losses, they've turned into 5-game losing streaks, by the way. You know, just the way the numbers work. Once again, what is his offense? Does he make the correct coaching staff moves? I still wonder how much having Adam Stenovich as the OC has affected this team. You know, we talked a lot about the gold zone in the past, and last year it wasn't great, but Hackett isn't doing very great in Denver, but Getsy's looking pretty solid in Chicago.
He's turning it around
right now. But if nothing else, it's like, you know, how much of this is what you're deciding? And once again, I mean, we've talked about him a lot this year, but this game didn't really matter. Joe Barry still seems to be a bad hire. We'll see what the defense looks like with Gary being out. I don't have the highest of hopes, but overall, Billy, what do you think of the coaching staff?
How much time have you got?
Yeah, I know.
It seems like during this 5-game losing streak that things have just kind of snowballed.
Yeah.
You know, we were in the games against the Giants. We didn't execute. And I don't think that we made the best second half adjustments against the Giants.
Yeah.
And against the Jets. But now the last few games, it seemed like the team is just starting to get more and more sloppy. Mm. You know, their penalties, we've been a team that gets penalized fairly frequently most of the season.
And mostly when you're, on special teams.
When you're losing, it just makes everything else worse, right? But now you're starting to see it 2 games in a row, unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. Quay got booted against the Bills.
Yeah.
Jair had one against Detroit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to blame the roughing the passer on JJ, but 2 games in a row we've had unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. Give the other team an additional 15 yards, extend the drive into our territory. And when you're a team like this that doesn't have the firepower on offense and you don't necessarily trust the defense, you can't be making mistakes like that.
Yeah, it's tough. It really does feel like more than ever that this is a poorly coached football team. It is just the little things that are getting in the way. And God, I don't know. A lot of things are mirroring, like I said earlier, getting back with Mike McCarthy. You know, the worst thing that McCarthy did in his time with the Green Bay Packers was sticking on with Dom Capers too long. And now we're seeing with Matt LaFleur where I don't know if he's very good at hiring guys. That seems like the middling positional coaches are fine. You know, hiring Stenovich in the first place was great. Hackett, Getsy, which was kind of more of a Rodgers hire. But now we're seeing with moving up Stenovich and, I mean, Rich Bisaccia is just fine, but Joe Barry, not very good. It's, I don't know. I still really like Matt LaFleur, but the idea is creeping up again. Is this guy a coordinator more than he is a head coach?
And I like Matt LaFleur still. I'm optimistic that he's going to figure it out and get it turned around. I mean, you don't win 39 games your first 3 years as an NFL head coach by accident.
Right.
Okay. Regardless of who your quarterback is. I think that some of these staffing moves need to be questioned. And Stenovich was the one that popped out at me. I mean, this dude's been in Green Bay. This is his 4th year now, correct?
Yeah. He was just a quality control coach before that, or assistant.
He was an assistant O-line coach for San Francisco for 2 years before this. So in 6 years, he's gone from assistant O-line coach with San Francisco, who had no NFL experience of any type. And now he's the offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
I understand wanting to promote from within, but when you lose Hackett and Getsy, you know, those are two big pieces, and I think that's part of it, but it feels like we might have tried to rush Stenovich into a position that he either isn't qualified for or isn't ready for.
Yeah, I think so too. Unfortunately, just looking at it, and this is not knowing anything. You have Matt, the last few years, the 13 win seasons, we have Matt LaFleur, Nathaniel Hackett, and Luke Getsy. Nathaniel Hackett was an offensive coordinator for the Jaguars for a while. He's called plays in the past, but he's put together game plans. Luke Getsy, he was a wide receiver coach before coming on with us, but he was the offensive coordinator at Mississippi State, Boston College, wherever he was. But once again, game plans on the offense. And now,
and then working with Rodgers, right?
Yes.
With the passing game. He was the passing game coordinator?
Yeah. Well, yes. Yes. So he was, you know, those were the three main guys coming up with the game plans on offense. Now we lose both of them, and you have Adam Stenovich, who was the run game coordinator last year, but he's mostly been an offensive line coach, and now he's number two in charge for coming up with the game plan.
Right.
So we're seeing those effects. Moving on, last guy to talk about, and we've already gone a little long here, Brian Gutekunst. It's very tough. There's been a lot of, you know, shit going on in the Packer fan base this week. We are, as a franchise, a little lost right now. You know, what is the plan? We re-signed Rodgers, but, you know, was this a little too late? Should we have just started the rebuild early? And that's what we're kind of seeing. He failed getting weapons around Rodgers going into this year. We could probably say that matter-of-factly with seeing how Sammy's played and how Watson has, you know, held up. Once again, should we have traded Aaron Rodgers? Other than that, his drafts have been suspect, and I think the thing that really worries me is we're pretty much locked in with Aaron Rodgers this year and next year, but we're up against the cap. We're already $30 million over the cap next year, so there's some cuts that are going to have to be made. We're not going to be able to be active in free agency, so we're going to have to improve through the draft. And although he's had some pretty good draft picks in Jair Alexander and Rashawn Gary, the only positions that I think Brian is good at drafting is offensive line and edge rushers. That's really it. Every other position, you can find huge, huge mistakes, rather it being Jay Sternberger or moving up to take Darnell Savage. Or, I mean, I think Watson's going to be a good player, but 2 second-round picks to take the guy, not looking very good right now. So overall, how are you feeling about Brian right now?
I 100% agree with you on the drafts. Mm-hmm. He's had some hits, and it seems like his hits have been pretty good. He's had some hits in free agency too with Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Adrian Amos.
He's very good at evaluating professional talent, but not college talent.
Yes. And I also think his roster management is more to blame here.
Yeah.
We saw, and I know, like last year, just talking with you on a week in, week out basis.
Unfortunately, yes.
You saw it coming that we only have Amari Rodgers and Randall Cobb under contract for the 2022 NFL season. Now, we knew that Lazard was an exclusive rights free agent, so chances are he was going to come back.
Yep.
But we knew Devontae was in the last year of his deal, EQ was in the last year of his deal, yeah. MBS was in the last year of his deal. So we knew that we had to get wide receivers. We also knew that we were going to be up against the cap. So for him to let it go that long where he didn't spread out the contracts a little bit, where instead of it's three guys coming up with their contracts due at one time, it's only one or two.
Yeah.
But then to go into the draft, you spend a second round pick on Christian Watson, which I think everybody agreed coming out is a high upside guy, but he was the least pro ready of the likely first round picks.
Yes.
At wide receiver. And then you end up with Dubs and Toure. And I think the idea was that maybe the team becomes a little bit more run centric, and this goes back to LaFleur and what the offense actually is.
Right.
Give the young receivers some time to gel with Rodgers. Maybe we have a little bit of a slow start, exactly like we've seen here, but you start to see some flashes and they put some stuff together. Now, the injuries haven't helped. Watson,
yeah,
lost a ton of time during the offseason because of his surgery. Dubs now out for 4 to 6 weeks. Toure's just started to come up and has shown flashes, and I'm excited to see what he's able to bring. But it just seems like it's a perfect storm of roster mismanagement, missed draft picks,
yeah,
offensive turnover, and trying to figure out what type of team we're going to be.
Yeah, it's tough because you know, with anything. Oh, it's like anything, you know, shout out Mike McCarthy. But it's no matter what you want to do with the 2020 Packers, it isn't just one thing. Everyone wants to point at the coaching or the team building or obviously Aaron Rodgers.
The offensive
this week.
Line, the defense, the special teams.
But it's like, well, Rodgers isn't playing well because the receivers are in the wrong spot and now he's a little more flustered with the offensive line's early struggles. And then also the game plan isn't great because of this, but then also the game plan isn't great because we don't have the right players because Goody didn't get the right guys. And it's just, there's so many different
things. Defense isn't good enough to keep us in every game when the offense isn't moving the ball and getting them off the field. The special teams has miscues and you know, we're getting backed up because of that or turning the ball over and putting our defense in bad spots. It's not good. It is everything.
So to wrap this up, Billy, how would you rank the three confidence level, one being the best between Rodgers, LaFleur, and Goody right now?
So I think it's pretty obvious that my answer is going to be I'm most confident in Rodgers right now.
Yeah.
We've seen it before. You know, the season opener last year against the Saints in Jacksonville, we laid an egg. We were terrible.
Yeah.
And there were questions then about if Rodgers was washed up and what's wrong with the Packers. And we went out and won 13 of our next 16 games.
Right.
So I continue to have faith in Rodgers, and I understand that he's had some struggles with the receivers. I'm hoping that we can get some guys healthy, continue to gel that group. I'm hoping by the end of the season, is it going to be too late by that point? Maybe, but I'm hoping by the end of the season, we start to see some promise for next year.
Yeah, this next game is going to be big. You know, I keep trying to trick my brain into, you know, what is the must-win game? It's like, well, the Lions were, but it's like, well, we kind of assumed we're going to lose to the Cowboys or someone else later. So if we flip them, we're fine. But yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I would say I put Matt first and then Rodgers second and then Goody third, just because if nothing else, Matt can still say, you know, he hasn't been running his offense. So if he gets his quarterback, his offense, we can still see what happens there. And with everything else going on, I do think he's gotten the least amount of flack this week. But
I would agree with you. I would put LaFleur at second. It just seems like some of the guys that he's gotten in the draft from Goody just, for whatever reason, aren't it or aren't able to come in and contribute the way we expect them to. Going back to Devontae Wyatt, a guy that I don't even know has played. Did he play against Detroit?
He did. He's been playing more and more snaps. He's pretty active when he's out there and shows a good motor, but yeah, it's, I don't know. I'd like to see more of him.
So to take a guy high like that on a defense that struggled to stop the run and he's not able to come in and play significant snaps and have a role, that makes me question if that was the best pick. The pick of Watson, we knew we needed wide receivers. We go and get the least pro-ready one. So, yes, I agree. Goody is lowest on my list in terms of confidence.
Yeah, and even like guys you don't think about, like A.J. Dillon, we all love him. He was a second-round pick. This team would probably have been better off if that pick was used on someone else and we just re-signed Jamal Williams for the cheap deal he got with Detroit. But, yeah, with that, we will have Take News.
Football time. Take News.
All right, Take News for the week with everything, you know, lit on fire. The Packers suck. We're 3-6. Fire everybody. You know, new little fun storylines are popping up. And one of the things that popped up on Tuesday, Devondre Campbell and Dallin Levitt, the reserve safety special teams player.
Yep.
They were on Clubhouse Live last night, and they, you know, we see the clip online, and you know, I'll just play the clip here talking about one Jordan Love.
I mean, I think Jordan's a great player. I think he's a great teammate. You know, I'm not in the offensive meetings, but I can't see the way that the ball comes out of his hands. I can't see the way that he's decisive playing against our defense. I mean, we, I don't know about y'all, but I think we got a pretty good defense, and he does a really good job for us in practice, gives us a real look, and it's pretty impressive. He's done some pretty impressive things.
He's a starting quarterback.
Okay, yes. There we go.
Yeah.
No question.
He's better than a lot of quarterbacks, and there's a lot of starting quarterbacks.
Wow, there we go. That's good stuff there. How about that? Yeah.
Okay, so we heard that clip there. First guy talking is Levitt. Second guy is Devondre Campbell. You know, we've been waiting to hear some murmurs of Jordan Love, but Billy, what did you think of what we heard there?
So when Levitt was talking at first there, my very first thought was, well, what else is he going to say?
Right.
That's his teammate. I mean, it would really be a much bigger story, in my opinion, if he came right out and said, Jordan Love is terrible. He can't fucking play in this league.
Right.
He doesn't have a chance. You know, so for him to build up his guy and not cause any waves in the locker room, I get that and I appreciate it. So I don't know that I'm going to put a whole lot of stock into that.
Yeah.
But for Campbell then to go on and say he's a starting quarterback in this league and better than some of the starting quarterbacks.
A lot of the starting quarterbacks.
That's interesting to me because I don't think anybody that watched Jordan Love in the preseason came away thinking that he was better than a lot of starting quarterbacks in this league. I'm trying to think of starting quarterbacks that I would take him over right now. Like, would Houston take him over Davis Mills? Maybe.
Yeah.
But he's potentially the worst starting quarterback in the league right now, and it's a toss-up.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. So when I first saw the tweet, all I saw, the caption for it that went viral, is just the eyeball emoji. I was like, oh, okay. So I click on it, listen to the whole video, hear what they're talking about, but I didn't hear the very beginning when they said Jordan. And then I hear Devondre Campbell saying he's a starting quarterback in the league. I thought that what I had missed at the beginning was them talking about Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Now, if you listen to that clip and think that they're talking about Aaron Rodgers, it is bad. It is they're talking shit about Aaron Rodgers. And you know, everything, not everything, but today on Twitter kind of popped off like, you know, we should really start Love. We should start Love. Dallin Levitt, do you know where Levitt went to college?
I don't.
So he went to a college called Utah State.
Oh, that's interesting.
He was teammates with Jordan Love in college. So to start this clip, it's his former college teammate. Do you see
that's his guy.
Yeah. So Tyler Dunn, the nice piece that he wrote about Jordan Love 1 or 2 years ago now. The main quotes he has in that article, teammates from Utah State, coach from Utah State. Again, we're getting him built up a little bit here from, you know, a former colleague from Utah State. Colleague is definitely the right word. Devondre Campbell, yes, him saying he's a starter, and he butts in and does say it, so that's kind of nice. That's literally
unsolicited.
Literally the most positive thing I've heard someone say about Jordan Love with the Packers outside of Matt LaFleur saying he could start in this league. But once again, looking at what he says, he is literally saying he is, you know, what is a lot in your eyes? What is a lot of players?
I would say at least 10.
So he's better than Andy Dalton, Carson Wentz, Marcus Mariota, Davis Mills, Jimmy G, Jacoby Brissett, Derek Carr. It's fine. I think he could be a startable quarterback in this league too, but it's startable quarterbacks aren't good quarterbacks.
Right. And what makes him startable is that he's young and he's a first round talent. Like Andy Dalton at this point, everybody knows what he is.
Yeah.
Nobody's expecting him to go out and lead you to the playoffs. So is he startable over Andy Dalton? Well, yeah, because Jordan Love is 25 years old and has way more upside. Andy Dalton is 32 and on his way out. But that doesn't mean that Jordan Love is better than Andy Dalton.
Yes, and I don't know. The whole Jordan Love conversation is exhausting at times. I really hate it. I really wish Jordan Love was good. If we knew Jordan Love was good, you know, last year, I would have been fine with moving on from Aaron Rodgers. But again, going back with Brian Gutekunst too, not only did he trade up for Jordan Love to put his flag in the sand and this is my guy, the most important pick that he has or will ever have as a GM, he also picked wrong. When we're seeing Jalen Hurts right now, who was on the board at the time, good chance he's going to be the MVP this year. I know this is way too early about talking about that type of shit, but it's just another wrinkle in the lack of confidence I have with how this team is being run right now. But sticking along with the Jordan Love conversation here, something else that caught my eye. Once again, popping up on Twitter, this conversation with him, saw this. One, Zach Jacobson, who writes for CBS Sports or something, Blogger Boy. This is, once again, a Blogger Boy versus Packers beat
type. So doesn't mean he's connected with the team. He's not in Green Bay.
Yes, he's not in Green Bay. I believe he lives in California. He's not at practice, all that stuff. So he throws this tweet out, and I think this is a perfect encapsulation of Blogger Boys versus guys who are on the beat, guys who are at the press conferences, guys who are at the practices. Zach tweets, "I don't know if Jordan Love is good. I don't know if he's bad either. Neither do you. He needs a chance, a real chance, to prepare as a starter, consistently play and build off of his performance on a week-to-week basis, not just scattered reps here and there in blowouts." It's like, okay, no, I'm not going to say anything about that. Bill Huber, who's covered the Packers since 2007, I believe, he's accredited by the NFL. He's at every practice. He's at every press conference. And he asks a lot of great questions in press conferences. Bill replies and says, "Who cares what you know? Who cares what I know after watching every pass he's thrown at his training camps and games?" Question mark. Mostly just saying, like, I don't know shit either. "The team knows. He goes live," parentheses, "other than sacks, against the defense all season," just saying in he's practicing every week, but he's not, you know, getting tackled. "They've got how many thousands of snaps," meaning this team has watched Jordan Love play thousands of snaps. And that's, I could keep going, but this has been a long episode. That sums it up right there. I don't understand why so many fans want to see Jordan Love when Brian Gutekunst, the biggest Jordan Love fan in the world, went up and got his guy, decided when, even after the Niners game in the playoffs last year, wasn't me, but a lot of fans are like, okay, let's move on. And if we decided to move on at that point, it was the perfect time. The cap was catching up with us. Rodgers didn't play very well in the playoffs. Yes, a two-time MVP. You knew that
Rodgers was going to want a massive payday too.
Yes.
And as you said, we have cap trouble. So yes, 100% agree.
It would have made sense to move on.
If Love was really the guy, that would have been the time to do it.
But they elected not to do that. Now he's just hanging out there. And now it's all these guys on fucking Twitter who haven't been there day in and day out. I'm sorry, but there was the stories too, just when we've heard so much about Aaron Rodgers and his practice habits and how serious he would take it back in the day and all that. I have heard very, very little about Jordan Love. There was a couple training camp practices where he looked really well. And again, are we going to give up on this season just to see Jordan Love? You remember, okay, what was the overall thoughts on Jordan Love this preseason, Billy? What did you think most people were kind of saying about him?
It was meh. He was fine. Like he made some plays, made a couple of nice throws, but I don't remember any plays where I went, wow, that's an NFL starting quarterback throw. He's showing flashes, you know, that I would expect to see from the next starting quarterback of the Green Bay Packers.
Yes, I agree. So he flashed at times. There are few and far between, but there was a couple throws where you go, oh, okay, I didn't see that. I didn't see that last year or the year before. I guess we didn't really see him the first COVID year. People were still very excited after seeing Jordan Love this past preseason. You know how he finished? He had the most interceptions this preseason, and you know, a lot of teams have a bunch of quarterbacks playing in the preseason, but a lot of starters don't play. He was the 82nd ranked quarterback in the preseason this year. We had the likes of Scott Tolzien and Brett Hundley and Graham Harrell. Yet Scott Tolzien, not so much. Who blew up the preseason. Cookie cutter defenses. Rodgers doesn't like playing in the preseason because he said there's no point. The defense isn't scheming anything up. And Jordan Love struggled in that. And now, because you have your own doubts as a fan in Aaron Rodgers and you want to see for yourself what Jordan Love is, you want to throw away the season when we have already shown contractually that we are not going to buy into this guy? I don't get it with some of these fans.
This is where I'm going to leave it. In the offseason, I think everybody felt that with Rodgers back, you know, this is kind of the last dance, right? To steal from the Bulls dynasty documentary. This is the last dance. Rodgers is around for one more shot. You know, we knew that Adams was a big loss. Mm-hmm. I think we all felt that this was a potential Super Bowl roster. Not a lock by any means, but I think we saw how wide open the NFC is. The Bucs are down. The Rams are down. The Eagles are off to a good start. They haven't really impressed me. The Vikings are way out in front of this division. They haven't blown me away. They've won their last six games by less than 8 points. Mm-hmm. So they appear beatable. Everybody in the NFC appears beatable. So even though we're 3-6, we've seen crazier shit happen at quarterback or with a team with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. Run the table.
Yes.
Relax. Now you want to throw it away for a guy that this team wasn't willing to hitch its wagon to last year when the opportunity arose? It just doesn't make sense. I think we ride out the year with Rodgers because throwing in Jordan Love is waving the white towel. And what kind of message does that send in the organization?
Yep, I agree. Maybe later on in this year, I thought of it today too. It wouldn't be the worst thing if Rodgers had an injury the last month. That would be the best way to go about it, but...
Right.
I agree.
Or if the thumb flares up, yes. Like, okay, set out a week.
It's really bad now.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Either way, way too early to be talking about Jordan Love, but I'll tell you what it's not too early for. It's Kyle an Idiot.
I'm not an idiot.
Okay. You sure?
Yes.
All right. Is Kyle an Idiot for the week? Billy, you are a very intelligent Packers fan. You know a lot about the team. I don't think we'll ever have a bigger crater in a valley for what the questions were that I gave Andrew last week to what we will have this week. I think it's, and even with Kyle too, he's a little younger, so I couldn't give him the real questions I want to. Not, he hasn't dove into the history, so I hope you're ready for this week.
Well, so
the toughest slate of questions we've ever had.
I'm going to apologize in advance to Andrew and Kyle for continuing to let this overall record here on success rate plummet on the year.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll see here. Three questions for you, Billy. Let's see. All right. With a 3-6 record, the Packers are feeling a lot like the 2005 Packers. 2005 was the breakout/rookie year of our Lord and Savior Sam Congato, who was in their sophomore season as a fullback for that team.
Fullback back in 2005. Is it John Kuhn?
Oh, no, sorry. It is not John Kuhn. John, I believe, signed the year later. This would also be a little too late for one William Henderson. Would you happen to have a second guess?
Vontae Leach.
It is Vontae Leach. Yeah, very good. His second year. I was hoping he was the lead rusher. He was a big old boy. I still remember being at the Falcons-Packers preseason game in 2004 or 2005 and watching Favre throw a ball off of Vontae Leach's hands in the flat. And I don't know why that stuck with me, but wow. Okay, terrible start. Can't believe you don't know who Vontae Leach is, who I doubt many listeners know right now. But I digress. Moving on, the second question here, Billy. Jeff Saturday is unsurprisingly the new head coach of the Indianapolis Colts.
Unsurprisingly?
Hey, I got to throw in some jokes in there. He was the Packers center in 2012. Billy, who started 16 games at left tackle that season?
2012.
You know, I'm asking you the question, so, you know, it's obviously going to be a little, you know, not maybe obvious, but who was starting at tackle in 2012 after the...
That was the year after we went 15-1, correct?
True. I'll give you a hint that this guy also started the majority of those games at left tackle in 2011.
Marshall Newhouse.
Yes, very good. The fifth round pick, Marshall Newhouse out of TCU. He was a practice squad player pretty much all his rookie year, the Super Bowl year, but started all 16 games at left tackle, that 2020 kind of weird year in the Packers' history coming off the 2011 season. Very good, Billy. And now your final question. Someone else returning, Mike McCarthy, is returning to Green Bay this week. There are 10 coaches with ties to the Packers on his staff. Can you name three of them?
Scott Tolzien is one.
Yep.
Oh, man, let's see.
So McCarthy said 10 yesterday. I only have a couple written down, but there's enough here where you could get three of them.
Are they all former coaches or are they some players too?
Three are former Green Bay Packers. One might be both. And three, well, one's kind of a outlier, but the other two big ones are coaches.
Okay. So, like I said, Scott Tolzien.
Still correct.
Scoots.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag Scott Tolzien spin move.
One of my favorite obscure highlights, by the way. Okay, I'm just trying to buy some time here.
So I'll give you a clue. Two of the coaches have the same first name.
Is Marquand Manuel a head coach or an assistant coach?
I'll have to check, but I don't think he is. I'll skip that one. Keep thinking.
Okay.
Okay, Billy, I'm going to start counting you down here. 5, 4, 3.
Two. Let's see here.
I'll give you the last clue. The
Campen, James Campen.
No, God, no, you're right. Oh, you're wrong. The two coaches named Joe.
Joe Philbin.
And who's the other one? Joe Witt Jr. God, I wish it was Joe Barry. Joe Witt Jr., the old secondary coach for the Packers, the other former players, Rob Davis and Al Rob Harris. Davis.
I should have known Al Harris. I know we've talked about it.
Yeah, Al Harris, the secondary coach. Rob Davis is a weird, I think he was too with the Packers.
He was director of pro personnel, I think.
Yeah, and he is the assistant head coach for the Cowboys right now.
Wow.
He's had a very interesting career. He was the Packers' long snapper for the longest time, worked for the Packers' front office, and once McCarthy left, he brought Rob Davis with him, which is a little strange. But, yeah, either way, I guess, Billy, you showed your knowledge, if nothing else, on that on those three questions. What is my Stump Spenny question for the week?
So, Spencer, as you're aware, the Green Bay Packers and Dallas Cowboys are facing off at Lambeau Field this Sunday afternoon.
I know this, yes.
The Packers and Cowboys have played a total of 37 games in their storied rivalry.
Oh, God, okay.
Including playoffs.
Okay.
My question for you is, who leads the series? And how many wins do the Packers have? And I'll let you get within two in either direction.
Oh God.
And give you the point.
Man, 37 games?
37 games. Cowboys founded in 1961, I believe.
Yeah, I know I looked, and in recent history, we've won like 8 of the last 9 almost, quite a few of most recent history, but I know in the 90s they had our number for the longest time. It wasn't until after getting past them where we knew we had a chance to win the Super Bowl.
We were terrible in the 70s and 80s.
We were terrible in the 70s and 80s. Obviously, we had the Ice Bowl and everything. So how many wins do the Packers have out of the 37?
And who leads the series?
Fuck. I almost want to hedge. God. Because I feel like the Cowboys should have it. Okay, this is dumb. I'm going to just hedge here. I'm going to say the Cowboys lead it, but I'm going to say the Packers have 25 wins.
Unfortunately, you're incorrect on both.
Okay.
The Packers lead the series 20 games to 17.
Oh, okay.
Which surprised I would have expected the Cowboys to be leading the series too. So
yeah.
For the Packers to have 20 wins was surprising to me.
Yeah, I would just assume 70s, 80s, 90s is all
right.
Dallas,
at least until we won the Super Bowl. Then I remember we played Dallas at Lambeau, beat them like 45-17, and it seemed like maybe that turned the tide. But
God, yeah. And then the other turning the tide too, I saw this, I was cruise eBay looking for Packer shit. They are selling the game ball that was presented to Terrell Owens in that playoff game that he actually dropped.
Against San Francisco?
Yeah, the Packers. Oh, yeah,
so. I'm still not over that game.
Yeah, speaking about, I don't know, less than ideal games. Packers preview for the Cowboys game this Sunday, a 3:25 kickoff. Fox coverage, once again, we have the Burkhart-Greg Olsen treatment. Packers are 5-point dogs at home. The over-under is set at 42.5. The Dallas Cowboys are coming into Green Bay. What are you looking at me weird for? Was that number wrong?
When's the last time we were a home dog of that margin?
A while. I don't even want to know. We keep getting so many different stats this year that are demoralizing. I don't even want to know what it is.
That was, unfortunately, my very first thought was, good Lord, I don't remember the last time we were a dog at home and number two, a dog by five.
I never bet on Packer games, but seeing 5 points, I'm like, fuck, unbiased opinion, I would take the 5 points. But like I said, Cowboys 6-2, a little surprising, especially after Dak Prescott got hurt early this year. I think we all thought there was a good chance Mike McCarthy might not even be the coach coming into this game, but he is. And before we dive in, Mike McCarthy obviously coming back. Billy, what are your thoughts on Mike McCarthy briefly here before we dive into the preview?
I think that with hindsight here, a couple of years have passed. I appreciate that it was time to go. I don't think anybody would disagree with me on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope that we can all take a step back and recognize what he did with mm-hmm. the way that he helped resurrect Favre's career towards mm-hmm. His last couple of years in Green Bay. Favre threw 29 picks or whatever one of his last couple of years, got Favre to play in the system, had one of his best years in 2007.
Yep.
And seemed like he really got us moving right back in the right direction, got us the Super Bowl, obviously, kept us competitive, got us to the playoffs however many years in a row. And as I always say,
like just eight. I think it was like 7 or 8 years in a row.
Just give us a chance. Playoff football is just fluky. You need breaks. You need some luck. Just give us a chance has always been my mantra when it comes to the playoffs. And he did that yep. so well for so long.
Yep. Said it earlier. I think the worst thing about him was sticking on with Dom Capers too long. But other than that, great. I feel like if you could combine Mike McCarthy and Matt LaFleur, you have a really good head coach. I think Matt LaFleur, great offensive coordinator, knows more football stuff, but Mike McCarthy is a better leader of men, getting a message across. I said it to you earlier this year when we were going into the Bills game. I would feel better going into that game with Mike McCarthy, some surprise onside kicks, which we might even see on Sunday, who knows? That type of shit, always liked. I'll say this too. I've said it on Twitter recently. The way we kicked him out of Green Bay is fucking terrible. It's one of the worst things Mark Murphy has done. Mike McCarthy absolutely had to go, but to fire him right after the Cardinals game when all you had to do was wait the 12 hours, fire him in the morning, let him talk to his team. The guy was the fucking coach for 13 years. You know, clean rip off the Band-Aid. Nothing's weird. Instead, we had this awkward shit where he came back like 2 days later, talked to his team for the last time. All this, all that, whatever bullshit for Russ Ball being involved, I still think in pushing Mark Murphy to do that to embarrass McCarthy a little bit. And again, I think I said this story a couple years ago, back when I was a Railbird, being 15, 16 years old. I remember getting autographs, and it was 11 p.m., maybe midnight. Players' parking lot was empty. Me and a couple of the kids I was with were like, well, let's go to the other end where we know the coaches park. We're there for 5 seconds. An SUV pulls up, all tinted windows, no idea who it could be. We're only there for 5-10 minutes. Rolls down the window. Hey, boys, and it's Mike McCarthy. Couldn't have been any nicer, couldn't have been any cooler. Talked to us for 5-10 minutes, took pictures, autographs, talked to us about the team. Dude could have kept going, and we'd have no idea. But he, you know,
never known who it was, and never would have thought anything different, because it's yes. 11 o'clock at night. Like, the dude's just trying to go home.
Yes, and we saw him get emotional yesterday too in his own presser. So I like Mike McCarthy. It was time to move on, but God, I hope he kicked their ass on Sunday.
I hope he gets a warm reception coming out of the tunnel on yep. Sunday afternoon. And then, yes, God, I hope we get the win.
I think they'll do something with the Jumbotron too. And it's weird where the team is at, where going into this season, if the Packers were 6-3 and Dallas was 3-6, which we probably closer to expected, I think he would get a pretty shitty reception. But now that we're going through this, I think fans are going to be like, oh, maybe you weren't so bad after all. But moving on to the preview of the game, the Cowboys offense, pretty solid coming off a 29-49 win in Chicago with Dak Prescott as quarterback again. They are 14th in points per game, 13th in yards per rush, 15th in yards per pass, so pretty average all around. The defense is pretty damn good. Once again, Mike McCarthy leaves the Packers. First, he hires his own buddy in Jim Mora, I believe, to be the defensive coordinator, but realizes that's wrong and takes, God, what's his name now?
Dan Quinn.
Dan
Quinn.
Quinn.
Who we had the opportunity to hire instead of Joe Barry.
Yes. Well, no, we didn't have, we had the opportunity to hire him instead of Mike Pettine.
Okay.
But we
okay.
held on to him, so we couldn't. Quinn and LaFleur work together in Atlanta.
That's what would
happened. So very smart move by McCarthy to hire him. The defense is third in points per game, only giving up 16.6. 10th in yards per game. They have the most sacks in the league. They have the 7th most takeaways. They are 3rd best in pass yards and 22nd in rush yards per game. So a little weaker in the run game. On offense, Dak is back. Last week finished 21 for 27, 250 yards, 2 TDs, 1 pick. But he hasn't had a great year. Tony Pollard, their lead back right now, is averaging 6.2 yards a carry. He has 560 yards on the season with 5 touchdowns. Zeke is still with the team, too, a 4.1 average with 443 yards, but he did not play last week. CeeDee Lamb is a pretty good receiver, 556 yards and 3 touchdowns on the season. Other than that, Schultz, their tight end, is solid, had 6 receptions and 74 yards last week. So overall, all right. And once again, their defense, pretty solid. Micah Parsons, in the running for Defensive Player of the Year, has 8 sacks on the season. They have 3 other defensive ends with 4 or more sacks. And Trayvon Diggs has 3 picks, just doing what he does, getting coached up by Al Harris. With that, Billy, what are your thoughts going into this football game?
Well, it's certainly an interesting matchup here. I mean, the Cowboys, I think the Cowboys that we remember, you know, Tony Romo, Dak Prescott,
Miles
Ezekiel
Austin.
Elliott, Miles Austin, Dez Bryant, like, you were worried about their offense going down and scoring 30 points on you. We've had some great shootouts with those guys, especially down in Dallas, the one in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think this game is going to take on a little bit of a different tone. Obviously, our offense struggling. We've talked ad nauseum about that. The Cowboys offense doesn't really concern me too much. I came in thinking that they were one of the better rushing teams in the league because of that duo of Pollard and Zeke, and just haven't seen it. But their defense, as you pointed out, is strong. Not just Micah Parsons, who's all over the field, but they're getting pass rush from other folks.
Yeah.
And Diggs on the backside, I think it's going to be a low scoring. You know, I hope that, you know, this turns into a kind of game like we had in Buffalo where we just try and grind it out on the ground, keep us in it, and hope that, you know, maybe we get a call to go our way late. Maybe we get a good bounce on some fluky play.
We're due a few of those.
Just have something go our way at the end that we're able to put it away.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, I would say that I am very fearful of their running backs. Pollard seems like a guy who could make just about any play into a touchdown. Kind of that we're around that same time of year as 2 years ago when Dalvin Cook tore us up at Lambeau Field. You know, I can very easily see us losing this game with Dak Prescott only having 15 attempts and them sticking with the run, which would be ironic with it being Mike McCarthy sticking with, you know, the run game, specifically maybe even Pollard, the better of the two backs when, I mean, God, we keep saying the mirrors of McCarthy and LaFleur. Once again, you know, we were like, God, McCarthy, can you give Aaron Jones the ball more? And it's been more of the same for us this year. But yeah, I don't feel great about it, but I haven't felt great about much this year. So, Billy, what is your score prediction for this game?
So I've gone back and forth, and even just through the course of the podcast here, coming in, I was thinking we're going to lose by 2 touchdowns. But, you know, as we've kind of talked, I've started to realize that maybe the sky isn't falling as much. Rodgers played a terrible game against Detroit. I'm not refuting that. But I also just said I have the most confidence in him than I do LaFleur and Goody.
Sad.
So, you know what? I'm going to take the exact same approach that I had going into the Buffalo game. I hope that this is a game where we try and grind them out. We know that our defense needs to try and keep us in it. Our offense is opportunistic. Maybe we get a short field.
Uh-oh.
Maybe special teams contribute something positive.
This is too optimistic.
I'm going to say everybody's counting us out.
Oh, God.
Green Bay 24, Dallas 21.
Okay. That's a good score prediction. I had a very similar score prediction. God, you know, you're such a realist, Billy, that I was expecting you to take the Cowboys, and now I feel like I have to.
Well, it's a Packers podcast. One of us has to be a homer here.
Yeah, I guess. So, I don't know. I'm still really scared of this game. We keep waiting for this team to put it all together, like you said there. But God, especially after losing to the Lions, I think we'll find out pretty quick how much life this team and what kind of vibe they're going to roll with.
Absolutely. If we don't come back and have a better showing against Dallas after that performance,
yeah,
then it's going to be a much different feeling.
Which Andrew got on me last week when I was like, this game against the Lions, we have to win. And he was like, I thought you said that about the Commanders. I'm like, yeah, but
these last four games have been get right games, yes. Right?
So I'm going to go with a score of 24-17. I will pick the Dallas Cowboys to win. It just makes sense. They're favored to win by 5. I think McCarthy might actually, I think, once again, you know, he's a good leader. I don't know what he does week in and week out. He's got Kellen Moore as his offensive coordinator, Quinn as his right. defensive coordinator. I don't know how much he actually does, but maybe he gets his nose in the game planning this week and we see some type of surprise onside kick or some other shit just to assure the win for his side. But yes, I have the Cowboys winning 24-17. Billy, what is your bold prediction?
So I'm going to harken back to another comment that I made earlier.
No, no.
I like Samari Toure.
Okay.
He's gotten some run here. Like I said earlier, 4 targets each of the last 2 games, had that touchdown against Buffalo. Mm-hmm. He seems to be able to get open deep. Mm-hmm. And you called that throw to him against Detroit a YOLO throw, mm-hmm. showing that he has some faith in him. So I don't know if I'm the only person on the Samari Toure bandwagon.
A lot of people like him.
But maybe I'm the conductor right now.
Ooh, choo-choo, the NBS Express.
I'm going to say Samari Toure, 5 catches, 100-plus yards, and a touchdown.
Okay, very good. I like that bold prediction. I like how you're using a player for it. Sometimes Andrew just goes with general like offense, defense, which is fine. But I like that. And I think there's definitely more on the Toure Express than the NBS Express right now. I saw last week, too, like Aaron Nagler saying that he didn't understand why the Packers didn't re-sign MVS. And I'm like, for 10 mil per...
Has anybody been clamoring for him? What has he done in Kansas City?
Right. I agree. I don't know either. But my bold prediction for the week, going out there, you know, Rashawn Gary's going to be out towards ACL. We're going to see more of JJ and Preston. And God, Jonathan Garvin, you watch the replays. He does not look good whatsoever. I'm going to give a shout out to our boy who still follows us on Twitter, which you can too, PMP Pod. I have Ladarius Hamilton getting called up. He might not even be on the roster on Sunday, but I have him getting a sack on Sunday. A lot of people don't even know who he is. I believe he's still number 54, but my bold prediction is Ladarius Hamilton, not Zadarius, but Ladarius getting a sack on Sunday against the Dallas Cowboys. But with that, everyone's favorite part of the episode, if you could please leave a 5-star rating, that would be cool. Spotify or Apple or whatever else, if they have that, I don't care. Maybe just even on Facebook, just say this podcast is really good. I don't care. Any type of review, take a screenshot, send it to us at pmppodcast@gmail.com or DM it to us on Twitter @pmppod, and we will send you one free koozie. Or, you know, if you just want one, just ask and we'll send you one. But, you know, we're getting to the holidays season, kind of. We're getting the Christmas music. There's a free present for you. But with that, Billy, you know, we've talked a lot this episode. I really don't have anything else. Do you have anything else?
No, thanks for having me, Spencer. A lot of fun. Go Pack.
There we go. Well, with that, Eric Koskinen, please don't sue us. Anywhere I quit my job. Yeah, cause it just won't pay. I worked all year. I worked all month. Then they took my money. Hello, hello, I am recording. William, hello.
Good evening.
Okay, good. It's working. Hold it. Like, this is too far away. I always try to keep it like, yeah.
Something like this.
I don't think you can really be too close. And I don't know, I try to keep it
Okay.
William, we're in your house. You bought this house this year. How is it being a homeowner?
Homeownership is good. Quiet neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I have a gaggle of wild turkeys that like to frequent my yard, which is a little frustrating. But
do they cause damage?
Not in my yard, but at least in my neighbor, they've kind of dug up the grass there next to his tree, and they like to kind of roost down there when it's hot out. So I tried to chase them out of my yard, but nobody else seems to really care. So maybe I'm just the new guy on the block.
How many turkeys are there?
Oh my God! There was one day I was sitting in my office looking out on the backyard, and I saw like 9 or 10 of them just come through the backyard, walk between the house and the garage, just strutting their way out to the street like they own the place. So.
And then you chase them away like a madman.
I did, yes.
Do you have a weapon, a broom, or?
No, you. From what I've read, is you just kind of go out there and you yell at them and you make a bunch of noise and make yourself seem bigger so you look like a threat.
Yes, like if you're getting chased by a bear.
Right. You know, got to use my 6-foot wingspan, really intimidate them a little bit.
There you go.